welcome to the Victorian Fitness Business Breakfast. And it has been an absolutely huge week in Victoria. But before we go to Victorian news, I just want to thank everybody on behalf of Edwina and Justin on all of your positive feedback on our first episode last week, which was all about finance. And it was a great episode. And if you have missed it, what you can do is scroll down on Edwina's Facebook page here. You'll find the episode and you'll also find it on the gymowners.podbean.com and also on the active management page. So if you missed our episode last week on finance, that's where you'll find it. Now, this morning I'll be handing our interview over to Edwina Griffin. And as most of you know, she is a health and high performance expert and also was recently nominated and placed on the Fitness Australia board. So congratulations, Edwina.
Oh, thanks, Mel.
You're very welcome. So before we go ahead with today's interview, I just thought I'd give you a bit of a roundup on Victoria over the last week. We are so excited to be going to 100 people on Monday. Club owners have got their marketing out there. Members are booking into their classes. And fingers crossed, we will be able to eliminate the COVID marshals. So that's the big news in Victoria this week. Anticipation is high. 5 weeks to Christmas, what more could we want?
That sounds great, Mel. It's good to have some good news in Victoria, but surprisingly, we now have an issue in Adelaide. So I actually feel like we're going to have to move the business breakfast to expand it to include Adelaide as well. So, it's great to see some positive news for Victoria. And I am so excited that we have Mark Mathis on this morning. It's such perfect timing with some of the stories we heard last week, which we'll share with Mark as we have a chat. But I'm going to read a bit of his bio because I find him one of the most interesting psychologists I've ever read about when I read about his bio. He's pretty very well known. He is an extreme psychologist, founder of Mountain Missions and Psyched Up Proprietary Limited. He's a registered psych. We've got here somewhat begrudgingly at times, which I think is quite hilarious. Over the past 20 years, he's worked in some of the strangest, harshest and least clinical environments on the globe. He's managed human factors risk in mountains of Laos, worked with commanders of special operations forces in Afghanistan, debriefed wintering expeditioners of the Australian Antarctic program, designed and implemented local recruitment and induction programs in the badlands of Papua New Guinea and Timor, and established culture change programs in elite private schools, assessed and recruited Indigenous youth into mining jobs and all mining jobs in northwestern Australia, taken privileged Aussies into the mountains of Timor and Nepal, and he's also managed cast and crew on reality TV crews. His current projects are SAS Australia, Farmer Wants a Wife, Wangaratta Grit and Resilience Project, Grass Tree Ridge Farm, we're gonna have to ask what some of these are, and individual coaching and consulting. He spends his time working with elite performers from his base in northeast Vic on 130-acre farm. And he's the developer of the Patterns of Life model of extreme performance. So you can see why I had to read that, because there's just so much Mark's done. And I just think it's so, we're really lucky to have you, Mark. I say that because it's so appropriate with the struggles everyone's gone through this year for the average person like us who aren't necessarily extreme performers, although some fitness professionals may be, but we're not used to these extreme conditions. And I guess, you know, perhaps it could be considered similar in terms of our psyche. I don't know. And you're the expert, so we'll probably ask you about it. In terms of that, I guess, let me start with that. Is it a similar response that we have, you know, psychologically, if we're not an extreme athlete, with what we've gone through or what Victorians have gone through in Adelaide into a shutdown for such a long period?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And look, thank you, Edwina, for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat to your members, and particularly in Victoria, being a Victorian myself. And look, I think in response to your question, look, absolutely. I mean, people are people. And I think no matter, you know, what, you know, sort of bio or background or resume or CV you have, we all respond pretty much the same. And so when people are put in these, you know, fairly unique circumstances, we get a pretty similar, you know, set of responses, regardless of really your background or your training. So, look, there's a lot of, I guess, utility in that, you know, some of the, I guess, strategies that, you know, your members can use with, you know, within their own industry and with their own businesses, you know, can come out of their own back pocket, because they're probably similarly, you know, experiencing some of those things themselves as individuals as well.
Yeah. So with the business owners in Victoria coming back and trying to rebuild their business, and, you know, they've been through so much, trying to then have the energy to now start and rebuild their business, still stressed and potentially still suffering some of the symptoms of the stress they've endured. What strategies or tips would you have for people to sort of be able to keep going and to manage through this time?
Look, I think really the first one, and it's an obvious one, is to practice what you preach. I mean, you know, we work in the fitness industry, and ironically, my background is in sports psychology, and I started out as a personal trainer. So, you know, that's a long time ago now, mind you. But I think, look, you know, people very much, your clients are going to look to your business owners as a model of coping. So if you as a business owner or an individual within the health and fitness industry aren't practicing what you preach, then people see that through that fairly quickly. So really now's the time to take a look at your own life. I mean, COVID has provided us with a really unique opportunity, particularly so in Victoria, and South Australia, unfortunately, is probably about to learn the same lessons. You know, to kind of put some of the craziness on pause for a little while. And hopefully, you know, people have used that time to reflect a little bit about what their priorities are. And I certainly, you know, would assume that a lot of your members, you know, one of the priorities is being healthy and being balanced and having, you know, their own sort of health under control. But look, what we know from psych research as well, and it's primarily come out of the mental health space, is that really the most effective intervention, you know, in terms of predicting outcomes from a therapeutic intervention, is what we call the therapeutic alliance. In other words, if people like and respect their psychologist or their mental health worker, then guess what? They get better outcomes. And I would really suggest to your members that the same goes for the fitness industry. If they like and respect and look up to and can see a really effective model of health and wellbeing in, you know, their business owners or in their fitness industry instructors, then they're going to get better outcomes themselves. So firstly, practice what you preach. I think another big one at the current point in time is to try and get outside. I mean, the weather's just started to turn, you know, really quite lovely in many parts of Australia, and people have been locked up in Victoria for a long time. So, you know, nature has a really amazing healing impact, even if it's just to, you know, get outside and exercise in the park. So as business owners and as instructors, I think getting outside, you know, thinking about ways to maybe try and incorporate some outdoor modes of, you know, approaching their work, if only for themselves, or even out into some regional areas. So go for a drive and, you know, work out in a different space just to clear your head. And look, lastly, I think rebuilding social connections. I mean, Zoom's wonderful and, you know, we're all using it today. But, you know, it is a poor alternative for, you know, really spending face-to-face time. So as business leaders, I mean, they really need to look at their teams and their businesses and start to rebuild their own social connections as well, because they're the things we lean on in terms of our own social supports and wellbeing as well. So intentionally getting out and reconnecting with friends and business colleagues is really important.
So I love that. I've not heard the therapeutic, but what's it called again? The therapeutic... that response.
Therapeutic alliance.
I like it. But in terms of that, so you say they need to respect and like their team and the processes, is that what you're talking about as well in terms of respect the way they are dealing with health within the team?
Yeah, absolutely. So anybody who's in a health position, you know, where you're, I guess, supporting other people, you know, you are a role model, whether you like it or not. And you can certainly, you know, get a certain distance in a business sense or individually by, you know, using fantastic technique. So you can, you know, teach people, you know, all of the different strategies, methodologies to improve their health and well-being. But really what sits behind that from a change perspective is whether the individual is modeling those things themselves. And so, you know, we all know instructors and people who work in the health and fitness industry, not just exclusively fitness, but, you know, doctors, for example, who, you know, drink and smoke and party too hard. And, you know, they physically sometimes even don't look pictures of health. And we know that, you know, clinically that has an impact on whether people take their advice seriously or not. So, you know, getting your house in order is not only good for your own personal health, but it's also good for your business.
That's great advice. So can I then ask you some advice on what sort of, you know, training or advice should be giving team members, like in terms of bringing in some sort of training, or what sort of things would you advise that we should do? And then I'm going to ask after that if it's okay for what we shouldn't be doing terms of encouraging the positive mental health for the team.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think, look, one of the really interesting things that's going on in the space at the moment, we've just had the Productivity Commission drop a major report on mental health. And look, one of the things that's been, I guess, mooted in many industries, not just health, for a long time, is this move towards incorporating mental health into sort of work safe practices. So it's always kind of been there, but it's never really been endorsed or encouraged as something that you kind of have to do as a mandatory component. And really what the Productivity Commission report has just suggested to government, hasn't been adopted, of course, just yet, but is that, you know, psychosocial risks within the workplace, both for employees, business owners and clients, is likely to now be included as a sort of mandatory component. So what that really means, and COVID, of course, is highlighted again, is that, you know, we now need as businesses to take mental health really seriously. And that means we need to look at it from a risk perspective, risk to our business, risk to our clients, risk to our employees, and have strategies in place, just like we do for physical safety, you know, making sure people are, you know, working at, you know, the appropriate desk heights and, you know, have breaks and, you know, can't work for too long and have to have appropriate sort of opportunities to rest and so forth. The same is now about to start to occur within the mental health space. And so it's really timely that, you know, your members, I guess, start to think through these things. Is there a golden answer at this stage? Not really. I think a lot of it is common sense around mental health, but we can certainly start to be thinking through, well, what are the risks in my business, risks to particularly my team members, and how do I now start to include, you know, training or induction materials to give them the skills they need to look after themselves, each other, and their clients. And I guess some of the basic ones that I trot out, you know, just as examples more than anything, because remember, none of this is mandatory, is, you know, there's a plethora of mental health first aid courses now starting to sort of be disseminated into the business community. And look, health and fitness is one where I think it's really quite appropriate, because as I'm sure your members have experienced, you know, people come into fitness centers and often it's the first sort of cathartic release opportunity they've had in places like Victoria. And so you get all sorts of stuff starting to leak out the sides, so to speak. So your team members need to start to, you know, have some skills, some very basic skills. We're not, you know, suggesting everyone needs to be a mental health professional, but some very basic skills in managing that and providing, you know, sort of providing a first aid type response. And also to, you know, maybe look at some more complex skills in the future.
So unfortunately JT couldn't make today, but he shared with us last week a story of a fitness instructor team member who tried to commit suicide, and just the repercussions of that on the whole team and the business as a whole. So I guess, you know, the mental health first aid would be an awareness amongst the whole team to try and to bring that awareness up and look out for each other and know how to handle. But, you know, any tips you can give for handling a situation like that as a business owner? I mean, it's an overwhelming responsibility. Obviously, you can't take full responsibility for something like
Absolutely.
That. However, the responsibility is heightened when you know a team member's at that level. Is there any advice you can give around dealing with something like that?
Well, look, there's two things I'd say. A, again, self-care, because it is a very stressful and complex situation. And psychology and mental health is a bit of a dark art. It's a bit of a black box. You know, people don't know a lot about it. So looking after yourself and making sure that everybody in the team has access to resources, I think is really, you know, the primary initial sort of response, I'd say. But over and above that, I think that, you know, we can do some really simple stuff in terms of containment and, you know, I won't trot out the whole mental health sort of first aid model right now, but I'll certainly perhaps give you some resources to distribute, you know, via Facebook. There's a simple, just like there is, you know, Dr. ABC for, you know, for physical first aid, you know, there's some very simple processes that team members can use, you know, to try and contain that initial situation and respond. But over and above that initial sort of crisis, I think, you know, what business owners can be doing is, is looking at their mental health literacy. So how well does the team understand these issues, and do they have a basic frame on, you know, sort of understanding what is a mental health issue, what isn't a mental health issue? Because, you know, one of the dangers, I think, or one of the fears I think a lot of people have is, I don't understand this, I don't feel comfortable with it, and so rather than perhaps getting involved, you know, I'll step away or perhaps, you know, avoid that issue and assume and or hope that, you know, a GP or a psychologist will somehow magically pop up and fix it. And look, that's a natural human response to things that are scary. So it's not a criticism at all. But, you know, we can certainly be taking steps to increase our understanding of mental health, and some really simple online training that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of the, you know, Australian Psych Society has one, for example, where you can start to learn a little bit about it. So you know what you're looking for and you've got some basic first aid skills to respond.
Yeah, that sounds like great advice, and thanks for sharing that that information. Mel, go for it.
Mark, do you think that the mental health first aid course that you're speaking about, do you think that that should be compulsory training when young people go off and do Certificate 4 to become a personal trainer?
Like, I don't know about the compulsory part. I certainly think it would be a great idea. One of the things we do know from all of the mental health research is that people who work in professions that where they have either close personal space and or physical touching, for some reason, they are also the industries where people are much more likely to divulge personal information. So hairdressers, you know, massage therapists, physiotherapists, for some reason, because of that physical touching, and I'm not saying that, you know, COVID has changed some of that a little bit, but, you know, we do know that those are the professions where people are, A, much more likely to divulge personal information, and B, usually they're the only person that they'll feel safe divulging some of that personal mental health information to. Ironically, it's not psychologists. You know, it's usually the front line is those other professions. And so certainly within the military, for example, you know, we've started training all of our medics, so our first aiders, in mental health first aid, because again, they are the people that are most likely to be receiving this information firsthand. So I guess the short answer is yes, I think it'd be a great idea. I think we've got a little way to go from a legislative perspective to sort of see it be mandatory, but I look, it'd be a huge advantage.
Yeah, I mean, as a club owner, we all had to get online and do the COVID training, you know, on the DHHS website before we could open up. And I sort of feel that something similar would be a great idea when it comes to mental health and first aid, because when you put an employment job out there, you know, I want to hire a receptionist or I want to hire a group fitness instructor. Like you say, they come to the gym and they unload, you know, the members unload all of their problems and issues. I feel that now we have to have the COVID training. We should be saying you have to have the mental health first aid training as well. I just wanted to take a step back, if that's all right. Just earlier on in your conversation, you said that we have to get our house in order and pretty much that we need to walk our talk if we're going to be in the fitness and health industry. So in my club, I have group fitness instructors that are not size 8, size 10, they're size 14 and size 16 people. Do you think that as a consumer coming into my business, you would look at that in a negative way or look at that in a positive way?
No, I think it's about, again, I mean, not fulfilling too many stereotypes, because obviously we all know that, you know, within a consumer-based society, you know, there's enough push from the media to sort of create maladaptive stereotypes, particularly around, you know, body shape and size and fitness. You know, so we're looking, you know, the average from a mental health perspective, you know, statistically is from sort of, you know, minus 20% to plus 20%. So, you know, that's always been the case. And even from a mental health perspective, if we're, say, looking to diagnose things like, you know, depression or anxiety, which are the most prevalent issues, there's a fair range of moods, you know, that are still considered normal. So, you know, feeling depressed you know, 2 days out of seven doesn't mean you've got the diagnosis for depression. You know, it takes a fair range of normal, you know, sort of behaviors to fit the diagnostic criteria. And I think we really need to be careful about, you know, when I say getting your house in order, it's not conforming with those maladaptive stereotypes. It's just being a healthy, balanced, happy individual that, you know, spreads their efforts around in a variety of health, fitness, nutrition, and mental health issues, such that, you know, they've got a firm base on which to base decisions from. So the short answer is no, I don't think we need to be, you know, conforming and endorsing maladaptive stereotypes, but I think, you know, people will approach a range of instructors because they see themselves, you know, that they want somebody to be a bit like them.
I gave Edwina some questions during the week, so I'll hand that over to Edwina.
Sure. No, you can ask them. There's no need. I just wanted to check in with John and Catherine. We have two guests on who have got their cameras off, but are there any questions you wanted to add in, John and Catherine? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us, accidentally, I suppose. I'm actually wondering with Mark, you know, we're reopening. I guess the main focus is to reopen and reintroduce the services we've always offered. But how important is it to adapt now and actually offer, you know, different services, maybe more socially based, you know, aiming for more cohesion and that type of mental support?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think one of the critical issues in mental health, not just in the fitness industry, but across our communities, is reconnection. And by that, I mean, obviously, socially reconnecting. You know, we've obviously learned to adapt again to the sort of Zoom-based society, but I really think that there's a danger there. I think it certainly adds something to our sort of workplaces and communities and lives that we perhaps have really undervalued in the past. But you know, people still need to gather in social places, and there's no doubt that the fitness industry is a social place. It's where your members come quite often to be with people that are like them and socially. So I think there's a great business opportunity there if handled well. And you know, it needs to be part of your sort of strategic thinking around, you know, how do we provide an opportunity for people to reconnect? And I think that goes for not just your clients, but also your team members as well. I mean, people come to work quite often to be social as well. Now, if you're in an individual practice where you're sort of a sole operator, that can be a bit tricky. But you know, you still need to be thinking about how am I going to intentionally, you know, create space for myself to reconnect socially. And that means reaching out to friends and colleagues and intentionally, you know, having coffee dates or setting up a time to go and exercise together in the park, and intentionally, you know, talking about sort of, you know, your everyday life stuff, venting like we all do to our friends and colleagues. So I think the fitness industry is well placed to really, you know, take advantage of it, but to play a leadership role in providing that opportunity for people to reconnect with each other in a positive manner, in a way that models and builds, you know, really good mental health.
That's interesting. I noticed the emphasis on positive. Would you suggest some structure around that to ensure the conversation is directed given the circumstances?
Well, maybe not the conversation, but I just think the context. I mean, clearly in Australian culture for a long time, we've had the social context of being beers and a barbecue and that sort of, you know, perhaps somewhat maladaptive from a health perspective. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just that it's, you know, has some drawbacks, obviously. That, you know, we need to be careful about tacitly endorsing. So I think, you know, thinking through, you know, what are the healthy ways that communities and individuals connect with each other socially? What are the settings? You know, outdoors, parks, barbecue areas can be great, but, you know, think again about the, you know, where are the kids going to be, who's going to be looking after, you know, the amount of alcohol that's consumed. So you just need to be, I guess, a little bit strategic in your thinking and be, you know, creating a space or an environment or an opportunity where it's possible that endorses all of those really adaptive coping strategies. So, you know, exercise is a no-brainer. I mean, we all know that that's a positive influence on mental health. So if clearly building social activities around exercise is a fundamental part of our business. But then we just need to think about, you know, how far we digress from that. So social activity doesn't need to be separate from exercise. I mean, in and of itself, it is. So it's just a case of saying, well, let's just look at some of the other bits that go around that. You know, alcohol's a classic example of food, and trying to model again appropriately adaptive ways of reconnecting with people in social. Food's another great one. You know, we all like to eat, and we all eat in social settings. So let's just be careful about, you know, how we model using food as a social way to reconnect.
So John, is that, will you be adjusting your sessions or your classes as a result of that feedback? Is that what you were thinking?
I think it's more reassuring because we have talked as a team of actually introducing just more meeting groups, walking groups, running groups, that type of thing, where essentially it's not actually driven to create a mass revenue stream or anything like that. It was more about reintroducing people to a group exercise setting, and I think now it's obviously going to have a more powerful impact potentially on someone's mental health as well. So it was really good to hear.
John, we ran walking groups throughout lockdown, and they were the first class that everybody wanted to be part of. So they obviously, we were restricted on numbers, but we had to put more walking groups on. We didn't charge for them. We just ran it at a loss. We paid the instructor. The people came along. They met at the front of the club. There was a park across the road. So we just used the park across the road to do laps, for 45 minutes to an hour. And then as the walking groups progressed, they then ventured out into the street and that. So we found that the walking groups allowed the members to reconnect with each other, and they all had a similar interest, and that was the gym. And they all were able to talk about their experiences through lockdown. But Mark, if I can just ask you a question. We've been open now, I'm just going to say we've been open 10 or 12 days. We have had a couple of occasions where we have had a member have a meltdown, if that's the right word to use, in the club. So we had a lady on a cross trainer just break down and start crying. And then we had an ethnic gentleman at reception totally frustrated with the fact that we were only able to have X amount of people, you know, come to a class, and he kept missing out. And he actually started screaming about how he hated government and just venting. Now, we can equip our staff the best we can when it comes to objections about buying memberships.
Yeah.
But how do we equip our staff? And the majority of us have a young generation working behind the desk. So how do we equip them when this happens and they're rostered on? Because that's not what we employed them for.
Look, absolutely. And I guess I think it comes back to, I mean, the sort of mental health first aid training I talked about earlier is really the model that I'd be sort of suggesting that's the situation that's ideally suited for. I mean, we're not talking about people having psychotic episodes and, you know, really in-depth, complex mental health issues. The typical scenario is going to be exactly that, where people just basically have a bit of a meltdown. Yeah. And a lot of it is going to be, as I sort of suggested earlier, I think there's a real positive. It can be seen as a negative. There's a positive in the fact that the fitness industry is particularly going to be one of those areas where people are going to have that kind of cathartic release. You know, it's sort of the first time they've been allowed out of their homes sometimes, particularly in Victoria. And we know that, you know, physically activating, you know, and getting back into exercise releases all sorts of neurochemicals that can sometimes come out in unexpected ways. So I think, for being forewarned about that within your business and saying, look, we just need to be prepared for that. And the really simple model, I mean, I use Dr. ABC as a way of training, many organizations. So D is for danger again. Clearly, if the member is so out of control that there's a danger to themselves or to your staff member, then the first priority is to keep, you know, that staff member needs to be able to feel safe. So there's no moral, legal obligation for them to run in and crash tackle that person to the ground. They need to keep themselves safe. So that might mean observing from a distance. It might mean moving some other, you know, if there's other members in the gym, it might be moving them away. And firstly, prioritizing safety. The second part of that is responsiveness. I mean, people can get so wound up with adrenaline and cortisol that they just won't interact with you. They're on a bit of a, you know, a vortex. So making a quick assessment on how responsive that person is to engaging with you as a team member, and how responsive and comfortable you feel in talking to them. So, you know, you need to have some basic skills in, obviously, de-escalation. And if you don't have them, then your best bet might be just to observe from a distance. And then the ABC is arousal reduction. And we all know, think cool down, people, you know, so when people have done some pretty intense exercise, I mean, it's actually quite difficult. We all know that our mind works at a much faster pace because we've fired up all that adrenal system. So what we're trying to do is get people to calm down. So think cool down, you know, slowing down. If they're exercising, get them to slow down, not stop, but slow down, slow their breathing down, calm themselves, center, grounding, three deep breaths, because you won't get a lot of logic out of them if they're so aroused by, you know, whatever it is that they've worked themselves up into a bit of a rage about. You're not going to be able to talk logic to them at that point. So you really, your first priority is calming the situation. That might be go for a walk outside. It might be, you know, get away from the contained environment of the gym. It might be just spend 30 seconds, you know, slowing your breathing down, closing their eyes. And they're things that I'm sure most of your members would be comfortable in doing because it's sort of similar to a cool down anyway. You're trying to just de-escalate the system. So it's really focusing on that and getting the person back down out of that adrenal high, that cortisone sort of out of control. And then B is for brainstorm. So have a chat to them. What's worked in the past, you know? Might be just an opportunity for them to have a bit of a vent, and that's okay as long as you're prepared to listen. You know, venting is not an opportunity for you to solve all of that person's problems. It's an opportunity for you to listen. So sometimes that might mean letting them rant on a little bit, but if there's some ways you can tap into solutions that have worked for that individual in the past, then we try and brainstorm with them. And you can ask that question: what's worked for you in the past to get through these difficult times, or what sort of strategies have you tried that maybe haven't been effective? Let's avoid doing those things again. And then the C in Dr. ABC is to consult with others. If you're stumped, if you really don't know how to help the person, then either call in some assistance or consult with somebody else that you think may be able to give you some help so that you can try and at the very least be being proactive in trying to help that member, because they'll appreciate it at the end of the day, you know, that you've gone to the effort of, hey, I really don't know what to do here. I want to help you, so I'm just going to make a quick phone call. Are you okay if I leave you for 30 seconds and see if I can, you know, perhaps bring over a more experienced staff member or somebody who might be able to assist you? And worst case scenario, as I said, going back to the D for danger, if that's call an ambulance, then that's call an ambulance. You know, again, it's about safety and not seeing yourself as having some sort of obligation to solve all those people's problems. You're really trying to tap them into resources and maybe do some quick brainstorming, and that's about it.
That's fantastic advice. Thanks, Mark. I was just going to say, what are we going to do in the short term before we do the first aid course? So that's Dr. ABC. Yeah. Well, we all know Dr. ABC. It's just different acronym, different words beside them. So that's a fantastic tool to have at the counter and as a sort of go-to of how to tackle something that you may not be aware of.
Look, I've got a one pager on that, which sort of spells that out in a bit of detail. So I'm happy to distribute that to your members so that they can use it as a reference and build their own sort of model around it.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's brilliant. John and Catherine, I just wanted to check in with you again because we're going to wrap up shortly and just see where you're from and see if you've got any other questions before we wrap. And Mel, there's one question I haven't asked, if you want to, it's sort of almost been covered, so I've left it off. But John and Catherine, is there anything else you want to add, or at least let us know where you're from? I just realised we haven't asked that.
No, Catherine from Brimbank City Council. So we run Sunshine Leisure Centre, and we'll be running the St Albans Health and Wellbeing Hub, which is currently being built, which is really exciting. And actually, I suppose on that theme, that new centre, what we're actually doing there is co-locating other service partners. And the idea is that we can actually refer our members into different services as we become aware of particular challenges in their lives or the need for a different service. I suppose from a mental health point of view, I'm assuming it is just going to be the GP as your first point of call, but as much as we'd love fitness to solve every problem, if it needs to extend beyond that, what is the best referral process for our instructors?
Yeah, look. Best is an interesting word. Currently, the model, as I'm sure most of you know, is the GP controls access to pretty much all services. So, from a sort of Medicare, perspective and a professional mental health service, encouraging them to go and talk to their GP about those issues is the sort of gold standard at the moment, because the GP is the one who controls the dollars in terms of access then to psychologists and other mental health providers. Whilst I sort of jest a little bit about, gold standards, recognizing, I think, as if you sort of hinted at in your question, that all of us play a role, and maybe the GP and the psychologist in all circumstances is not the best solution. Coming back to that sort of comment about therapeutic alliance, you probably need to ask them, do they have a good GP? Do they have somebody that they feel comfortable talking to? And would they countenance talking to a psychologist or somebody if it's sort of warranted? Because we know that particularly men, my age group and demographic, they're very, very reticent to talk to mental health professionals. And that's not a reason to certainly avoid encouraging it. But if we're genuine about trying to help, people find solutions, then we need to also provide them with maybe a couple of other options. And that might be, do they have a family member that they feel comfortable talking to, or a peer or a colleague? Is there an EPA, EAP, I should say, an employee assistance program at their workplace that they could tap into? So again, coming back to brainstorming some solutions, I think the more genuine we are in just trying to help and sort of help them find solutions, you might find that the solution for that individual is not what you think is the best solution, but you can certainly spend a little bit of time, talking through those options.
Mark, just a last question before we go. Do you think it would be a good idea if health clubs were to run like a mental health night where we get somebody in to speak on mental health to our members and obviously to our staff?
The short answer is yes. I think like all things associated with mental health, I think you need to be quite canny in the way you brand it. I mean, I jokingly sort of tell stories about, talking to soldiers, and part of my previous role was to debrief soldiers coming back from operations. If you put 100 of them in the room and ask them to put their hand up if they've got any mental health issues, not surprisingly, no hands go up. So we just need to be a little bit careful and appreciate that there is still a stigma about mental health. So if you put on a mental health night, you'll get people self-select to go to that. So you'll have some people who go to it because they want help. And so you'll end up with a whole lot of people asking, a whole lot of tricky questions. But you'll also get a whole lot of people who don't go to that because it's a mental health night. So I would suggest maybe, couching it in terms of, holistic health or a well-rounded approach. So having a couple of other speakers and having, mental health as one of those topics. Because, most people are quite comfortable listening to a mental health talk as part of a package of things. But if it's a standalone, you'll get people say, oh, I don't want to be the one who walks into that room. Everyone's going to watch me and say, what's wrong with that person? So I think it's just appreciating that we're not quite there yet in terms of the community sort of appreciation of mental health. And being a little bit canny in the way. In the military, we call it counterinsurgency warfare. So it's sort of coming at things indirectly. And that can be, a much more palatable way for people to find out the same information, but in a way that they don't sort of balk at.
Thanks. That brings up a great point, which was on your list, Mel, and I just think it is sort of relevant in terms of, if we're having staff meetings or with our teams as managers of a team, based on what you just said, would it be correct to say to not sort of have a group check-in in a staff meeting? Would you recommend more one-on-one, or is it very, depending on the person, or how do you approach checking in with your team, given what you've just mentioned?
Sorry. Yeah, no, that's all right. Pets are good for our mental health. So I think you've sort of answered your own question there. Clearly, hopefully your business owners know their team pretty well. And there'll be some individuals where if you ask them about their mental health or their well-being in a public setting, they'd be horrified. And so I think it's a bit of horses for courses. You know, I think it's certainly appropriate to be modeling again, checking in on, you know, everyone's sort of well-being in that holistic sense. And so, you know, having staff meetings or team meetings where you're asking how people are traveling is totally fine. But not ignoring the fact that there'll probably be some people in that meeting who choose to say nothing, and you might have some suspicions. And so you need to sort of mentally say, all right, follow up on that person, but do it in a, you know, a fairly innocuous, much more private setting. So, you know, it's one of the challenges of often being a business owner or a leader. It's that, you know, often a lot of your management is done by walking around. It's bumping into people. And look, it's no different for psychologists, let me tell you. I mean, I spent a lot of time in some of these businesses and the military, you know, accidentally bumping into people when they were doing something fairly innocuous in a fairly quiet space and just going, g'day, you know, how are you doing? Because it's often in those settings which create a permissive environment for people to speak. So it's being aware of, I guess, the individual differences in your team and having a range of solutions. And intentionally creating space, you know, space both in a group setting, but also as in an individual space. And I know that, you know, sometimes can come at a bit of a cost of time and effort. But in the long run, you know, mental health issues from a work safe perspective are by far, they're about five times more expensive to manage through work cover and work safe than a physical injury. So from a business leadership perspective, it's time well invested.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Now, Mark, if people are wanting, you know, to get an expert in, or if people are wanting help, are you available for that sort of work, or how can they contact? I don't know whether you are. I can see your schedule. I don't know if you have any time, but
that's okay. Look, very happy to consult if people have got, you know, business questions around any of these issues. You know, I'll pop my website and an email address, perhaps in the contact details in the chat, and very happy for people to reach out. I don't do a lot of individual work for those reasons. I'm sort of flat out, but consulting and sort of strategic stuff, very, very happy to chat.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. So your website, markmatheson.com?
That's my personal one. There's also www.psychedup, P-S-Y-C-H-E-D-U-P, one word, .com.au. So if they Google Mark Matheson Psychologist, they'll find me.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for giving me all of this information. And I'm very, really excited about all those resources as well. I hadn't heard of particularly that sort of first aid option, Dr. ABC. I think I've taken something out of that. And I think all of us will. And you've given some amazing insights. Thank you so much for sharing your brilliant knowledge.
Pleasure. And good luck, everyone in Victoria, getting back into business. We need you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, guys. You. Thanks, John and Catherine, for joining us as well. All the best for you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.